think you're what they say you are. Ricky Lee, superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are?
It's showtime with Ricky Lee. Thank you for joining me here on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream current and past episodes at huntleyradio.com. Most people are familiar with the classic Charles Dickens story, A Christmas Carol. It has been made into countless movies and has become a holiday tradition for many theater companies. Jeff Cook is a talented writer and director who decided what A Christmas Carol needs is a new point of view for new audiences. Jeff will be bringing his new reimagined version of A Christmas Carol to the stage at the Woodstock Opera House, November 18th through December 4th, and is joining me here today to provide a sneak peek at what to expect. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Hi, thanks, Ricky. It's great to be back.
All right. Well, I want to just jump right in. This is your own original take on A Christmas Carol. So if you could kind of explain how that came about and what's so unique about this show, I think the audience would love to hear about it.
Sure. Well, Theater 121 in early June asked me if I was interested in putting in to direct this year's Christmas Carol. And my background with A Christmas Carol is that obviously I've seen several movie versions of it. When I was part of the Lou Awards committee a couple of years ago, I attended several productions of A Christmas Carol. I've been in several productions of A Christmas Carol. And, you know, I don't know if it's an aspect of that or of aspect in me being in my middle age, but I lost my enthusiasm for A Christmas Carol a while back. The story is so familiar. I don't really resonate with the themes as much as they did in Charles Dickens' time, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, greed is always a prevalent notion in society, but there's not a lot you can do about that, right? In my aspect. And the way the story unfolds, you don't really feel an emotional connection, give or take Tiny Tim, to anybody in the character. You watch events unfold and you're like, that's nice. You know, and at the same time, recognizing that for many people, it is Christmas comfort food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a tradition for them. They enjoy it. They like to get their family together and go out to dinner and have something to eat. So I recognize that there is a lot of history and tradition and familiarity around this story, but it's not really for me anymore. So I was like, I don't know, what version are you going to do? And they said, well, we haven't really selected one. We'll leave that up to the director.
Hmm.
So I started thinking, this might be a great opportunity for me. As you know, Ricky, I've dabbled in writing different things for all my life. I've written things, but really started producing things over the last decade or so.
And that would be entertainment pieces ranging from television to theater.
Yes. Yes. Web series that's available on YouTube called Upstage. But it's really been kind of a progression. As you know, I started writing parodies of old time radio shows.
Yes.
Which kind of got me familiar with not only adapting content, but also identifying what pieces resonate with audiences and what pieces I can fool around with. And so I thought this might be an opportunity for me to write a version of A Christmas Carol that addresses the things that I have always enjoyed less about the story, And so I gave Theater 121 three options. I said, I'll either write a straightforward traditional Christmas carol the way everybody knows it, the way everybody loves it, or I'll do a version that is all kids.
Oh.
Like, but with you know, theater style production values and costumes. It's just kind of like reminiscent of that movie Bugsy Malone.
That's exactly what sprung to mind when you said that.
Yeah, you know, Scrooge is a kid and Marley's a kid and the spirits. But so, or I could do this version where Scrooge is a woman. And I really hadn't thought about it too much because I really had my hopes set on doing the kids version. But they took a vote and they asked me to write the version with Scrooge as a woman.
Okay.
So I started tackling that. And at first I started just doing a straight, what I call putting a wig on Scrooge and calling it a day, right? She's going to say the same. It's basically a traditional adaptation, only Scrooge is a woman. And it didn't work. It was not working. People I showed it to, myself, it just didn't ring true. So I just kept writing. That's, as a writer, that's what I do. I just keep writing, you know? And slowly this voice of the character of Elizabeth Scrooge started coming through and telling me, you're telling the wrong story. This is not the story you need to tell. This is not this character's journey.
Okay.
So I started, it started becoming something new. And at the same time, I had to make sure that it's grounded very much in Dickens' world, 1843 London. You've got, you know, you have Marley, you have the spirits, you have Tiny Tim, all the touch points that people say, okay, this is a Christmas carol, right? I'm watching a Christmas carol. Here's what's happening. And then knowing what I could play with to make it something more relevant to modern audiences.
Now, Elizabeth Scrooge, is there any relation to Ebenezer Scrooge, or is Ebenezer just gone, not in the picture?
He's not in the picture. Okay. There is one reference where Scrooge says, my father wanted a son, and if not for the whim of biology, I would have been Ebenezer, if you can believe that.
Okay, so, I like that. Nice little nod.
Yeah, I give a little nod to it, but this is very much a different kind of Scrooge. Maybe for Marvel Cinematic Universe fans out there, a multiverse Scrooge. You know, it's Scrooge. She has the same the same name, but she has her own motivations. She has her own forces driving her, and one of the things. The major themes that came out of my exploration of this character was that it's not about greed. This Christmas carol is not about greed. It's about pain.
Okay. Can you elaborate?
Yes. There's a quote from Christmas Past in the play. If I could quote myself, Ricky.
Oh boy. Now you're sounding like me.
Yeah. Where she says, it's about what happens to you in the course of living your life, how you deal with pain. And she's talking to Scrooge and she says, how you've always dealt with pain. And it's something that, you know, not everybody deals with greed, but everybody deals with pain in their life. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's what you do with that and whether you allow it to close off your heart and pulls you away from the world, or whether you choose to go forward into the world despite the pain. So that's really what my version of A Christmas Carol is about. I've cut out some of the what I would consider extemporaneous scenes. and replace them by going deeper into the relationship between Scrooge and the Bell character in the novella, which is his true love that he loses. And in my case, Elizabeth is dating Bill, and has to, you know, that has to deal with that relationship. And also her relationship with her sister, Fan, who in the novella just has a little drop-in piece.
Yeah.
But it's referenced later in there that that Fan died giving birth to Fred, the nephew, Fred.
Right.
So there's all that relationship between Scrooge and Fred, and we're showing Scrooge and Fan, and how the choices that you make because of the things that happen to you in life can affect not only you, but everyone around you.
Kind of the butterfly effect.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you know, it's the other thing that I didn't really, that I always had a problem with in the original Christmas Carol is Scrooge changes kind of because he dies and nobody liked him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And to me, that's always been a very selfish reason to change. I mean, change is good, don't get me wrong, no matter how, what the reason is. But so I kind of not to give away anything,
right,
but that's not the motivation for Elizabeth to change.
Okay. Okay, it's going back to our pain theme and something along from that river.
Right. It's moving on despite your pain rather than giving into it and let it control your life.
Excellent, excellent. You're listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. You can always stream episodes at huntleyradio.com. Today, we are talking with writer-director Jeff Cook, who is bringing his exciting reimagined A Christmas Carol to the Woodstock Opera House November 18th through December 4th. I can tell you firsthand that Jeff is an amazing creative talent, so you are going to want to grab up your tickets right away. For ticket information, visit woodstockoperahouse.com or call the box office at 815-338-5300. And okay, so Jeff, you have your concept for the show. You finally figured out what you're going to do with the script, where to go with it. What happens next?
Ricky, you are very good at this. You know right how to segue into the next topic. What happens next is the author comes to the realization that as a middle-aged man, he may not have the best perspective on writing for the heart and soul of a woman.
Oh, good insight.
Yes, yes, right. As it occurs to me, like 3/4 through it. So what I did was I reached out to about 20 of the smartest, most opinionated, kindest, most generous women I know. And I sent them the script, and I said, "Take me to the woodshed if I'm wrong." And they did. They Ooh. Did. There were a couple of things. There was a scene that's no longer in it. For example, when Scrooge meets up with Marley a second time, and you know thanks him for intervening on her behalf and everything he's done for her. And someone was like, wait. You can't have Elizabeth go through all of this journey and then at the end, a man saves her.
Oh, excellent point.
But I didn't even think of it. It's those unconscious biases that you have that you need people to point out, so that you can tell an authentic story.
Yeah.
You know, so all of these women, and they're named in the program for a special thanks, but all of them contributed in one way or another to making sure that the voices of the characters. The only real characters I've changed were Elizabeth Scrooge and Alice Cratchit.
Okay.
So in my version, Alice is still works for Elizabeth, but she's a widow.
Oh, okay.
Who lives with her mother and all the kids. And in my version, Scrooge is kind of like her boss / mentor, right? She's trying to show Alice, really trying to convince Alice to be more like her, because Alice is a chipper, cheery, naive in Elizabeth's opinion. And so how that relationship plays out as well over the course of the story is just another relationship / emotional. You know, my goal is to have everybody care about every character that's on that stage and be invested in them intellectually and emotionally, so that you can tell this story and take them on a journey, and you're not just watching scene to scene to scene unfold until the end. You know, I think that I put in some twists and turns based on my understanding of the audience's understanding of A Christmas Carol, and what they're expecting to have happen. And so I've been able to kind of turn a little bit of that on its head. But
again, not without being disrespectful to the story.
Right. The story and the tradition and the love of A Christmas Carol that people have was paramount in my mind the whole time. You know, it's not poking fun at A Christmas Carol. It's not a parody of A Christmas Carol. It's very much the Christmas Carol story, just told from a slightly different perspective.
Now, was the choice to make Bob Cratchit into Alice Cratchit, was that in your head from the get-go, or did that evolve as the script evolved?
That evolved as the script evolved. Again, you know, I the relationship in the novella between Scrooge and Bob Cratchit is very boss employee kind of thing.
Yeah.
And again, you're like, okay, you know. I mean, I don't really feel bad for Bob, because I don't know Bob,
right,
you know?
Right.
And I don't really feel good for Scrooge, because I don't really know Scrooge. So I wanted to deepen that relationship and make it more than just a boss employee relationship. And so that's where the mentor aspect came in.
I just think that's brilliant. And so you get this feedback from this group of wonderfully talented given women. You sculpt your script into what you want it to be, what it's ready for, and then it's time to produce it, right?
Right. And then it's time to find the actors who can convey the characters. You know, as a world premiere production, there's no reference point for these actors. They can't go on YouTube and watch a video of somebody else playing the role, or, you know, watch. So it was really important for me to cast the right people. And a lot of times you'll get people, particularly for Scrooge, who are really good at playing the Scroogey part of it. And then the change is sort of unconvincing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, again, okay. But, you know, I wanted to make sure that I was watching this one interview where this actor was saying that playing Scrooge was like playing two completely different characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make sure that was not true. It's two halves of the same character. So I wanted to cast somebody who, even when they were being their Scroogiest Scrooge, conveyed a sense of that vulnerability and that other side was there, okay. Part of him. You know, I want the audience to root for Scrooge to turn herself around, and you have to like the character in order to do that. So I had to find ways to convey that. And, you know, whenever I cast, I always cast a person who is 90% what I'm looking for, both consciously and subconsciously, right? So mm-hmm. what they're deliberately putting out there and what they're putting out there by their presence and their look and their energy.
Okay.
And for my leads, my two leads, I found two wonderful actresses, Nicole Lapas and Amanda Law Terry, who play Scrooge and Cratchit. And they were both so wonderful. I mean, you will fall in love with them. They will break your heart, and then they will mend it again. and they just have such masterful control over the characters and the content. And then I was very fortunate to be able to cast every other role from the three spirits down to the merry gentleman, the portly gentleman, and yeah. the merry gentleman in my book, to all the children's choir that we have, of some of the most talented people that I've worked with. And it's just amazing to watch something, to watch it come to life. You know, especially as I know you're a writer, and congratulations, by the way, on your Film Fest win for your
thank
script.
You. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
We'll have to turn this around, and I'll have to come interview you.
Oh, that would be so much fun. We'll do that.
Right?
Yeah.
So you know how, like, you're writing, and something will come to you, and you'll be like, well, let's see what happens if I go down this road with yeah. it and see how and it's, you know, there's a lot of moments like that in the script that I can remember writing right here at my desk and just being like, I wonder about that. And now to see it come to life on stage and have it be everything you hoped it would be. It's just a really wonderful feeling.
And can you tell me a little bit about the other people involved in the production, producers, any of the tech direction, bringing that to light? Who else is involved in taking your concept from the page and putting it on the stage?
Well, first of all, I could not do anything without my lovely wife, Karen, who is producing this show, has been my mental and emotional support throughout the whole thing. She's got to be exhausted, but but she's such a trooper. And I any success that I have in life is due to her. So she's been producing it and carrying the weight of everything that's not director related. We also have a wonderful stage manager, Val Gorky. Mm-hmm. She is from the University of Whitewater Theater Department. She assistant stage managed Urinetown, mm-hmm. I think the previous Theater 121 show, Urinetown. And then she's stage managing this one as well as assistant directing it. And then she moves to the University of Florida. So this is kind of her last hurrah, but she is a wonderful addition as well. We have Tracy Landman, who is our technical coordinator and has been in charge of making sure all of the opera house based decisions and the set design have been taken care of. And then we have Shannon Lee Day as our costume designer and content coordinator. And Shannon has done such a great job on the costumes. It's going to look great. In fact, it's going to look greater than I would have even thought, because we've had discussions where I've said, I like that dress, for example. I like that dress. Get that dress. And she's like, I'm not going to get that dress. I'm like, why not? I'm the director. Get that dress. She's like, no, I'm not going to get that dress, because that dress is clearly from 1860, and our play is set in 1840.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, So she's really got her eye on the ball and making sure that everything is going to be period specific, you know, to this play. So we're really trying to, like I said, convey it's really grounded in Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
So people who have grown up with A Christmas Carol are still going to love this. And people who want to experience something new finally have A Christmas Carol in a new way to enjoy it.
Yes, there is something for everyone in this. We have a children's choir of 12 children who serenade the audience throughout the show with Christmas carols. We have dance numbers. We have two dance numbers in it. We have all the festivity of Christmas and that warm glow of Christmas. And, you know, we have a new kind of slant on it that hopefully people who love A Christmas Carol, I challenge to come out and see this and not walk away with a smile on their face. And people who are looking for something new, we've got that in spades. So
you've been listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio. Catch up on past episodes at huntleyradio.com. Today we've been chatting with talented director and writer Jeff Cook about his unique and original reimagined production of A Christmas Carol, playing now through December 4th at the Woodstock Opera House. You will definitely want to experience this new holiday treasure for yourself. For ticket information, visit woodstockoperahouse.com or call the box office at 815-338-5300. We'll see you in the audience.